part of flyover country. This is Spin Sold Separately.
I forget every year how uncomfortable 30 below wind chills are. For those of you that aren't familiar with it, I mean, obviously it's uncomfortable, but it actually hurts. Like, everything feels like it's in slow motion. I mean, the wind, when it's that cold, it feels like it's whittling away at your skin. I complain about this stuff every year. Nobody forces me to live here. You know, Florida's just a 3-hour flight away. My family keeps me here. I've made it clear to you all how important my family is to me, and I think a Florida residency is in my future, but it's well off into the future yet. Welcome back, everyone, to Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. Great to be with you again. Sorry it took me a while to get back to the microphone here. This silly season at my day job combined with this winter just not cooperating as far as weather and temperature, and it's been a crazy month and it's only going to get crazier, but I wanted to make sure I got back to the microphone here. I don't like when it goes this long. It's been over a week and that's not okay, and I'm sorry, and I will make every effort to get on this at least once a week for the rest of the month here. The California-Florida comparison is still in the works. I'm not going to cover that today. There is so much good stuff there, and I've got a good start on it, but I want to make sure that we've really got that locked down because there are so many good comparison points. I want to make sure we've got every bit of information we can on that, and it's a lot of research, but it's fun. It's good stuff, and I want to make sure that it is well polished before I bring it to you. So we will be getting to that. But we got some good stuff for you today. Just on some very, very, oh boy, what's the word? Some unsettling current events, but we'll get to that. In the meantime, I encourage you to check your family history and see if you are in any way related to Juan Soto. Not sure if that's a name you're familiar with. If you're a baseball fan, you certainly are. He is a Major League Baseball player that just signed a 15-year, I still can't believe this number is real, $765 million contract. 15 years, $765 million, the biggest deal in Major League Baseball history. You've picked up on my obsession with statistics to this point, I'm sure. So I broke this down a couple of fun ways I think you'll find entertaining. So 15 years, $765 million. That is $51 million per year. Now, the Major League Baseball season is 162 games. And then, of course, you know, you got spring training. You got, you know, if you make the playoffs, you're going to play some more than that. But as far as regular season games go, there's 162 games a year. Now, very, very few players actually play all 162 games. And to be honest, I'm not sure if Juan Soto is one that ever has. He plays almost every day, but very, very few players actually make the 162. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, he plays all 162 games every year for the duration of the 15 years. He will make $314,000. $814 per game for 15 years, $314,000 and change per game. He will make $34,979 per inning if you break down each of those 162 games down to 9 innings per game. He'll make $139,726 per day, whether they play or not. That's just every day for 15 years, whether it's spring training, regular season, playoffs, off season, mid-January with his feet up on the beach, he's making $139,726 per day. That works out to $5,821 per hour, $97.03 per minute, or $1.62 per second, 24 hours a day for 15 years. That adds up. All of those add up to $765 million. I don't have the words. Knowing how hard I have to work and how much I have to work, item number four on that list was he will make $139,726 per day, every day, for 15 years. I don't make anywhere near that in an entire year, working 55 to 65 hour weeks. We will get into the income gap in meticulous detail in a future show, but that was something that broke last week, and the number, I mean, almost blew me off my chair. And when I started breaking that down on a per year, per day, I mean, per minute, $97 a minute. It's insane. We will get into this ridiculous income gap in the future. I am a sports fan. I've made clear my love for sports and how it has been such a great diversion in my life when I've needed to break away from reality for a little bit. Even as a lifelong sports fan, and I will be forever, I mean, I don't see any reason why I ever wouldn't be, this is absurd and borderline offensive, even to me. But we will get into that in the future. I got to tell you, every once in a while, you find yourself, you got the remote in your hand, you got a little bit of time on your hands, and you're just flipping through channels or flipping through streaming services, just looking for something that catches your eye to watch. Well, I was fortunate enough last weekend that I stumbled across a free movie on the Roku service. If you have a Roku smart TV, you have this Roku service. It is not subscription. It is completely free. I stumbled across a movie that I didn't even know existed, and I don't know how popular it was when it came out. I think it came out in 2016. I was not familiar with it. The movie is called LBJ. Obviously, Lyndon Baines Johnson. It is a Rob Reiner film. Let it never be said that I don't give credit where credit is due. Reiner is a top 10 all-time Trump derangement syndrome sufferer. But hey, I give credit where credit's due. This was a really, really good movie. Woody Harrelson plays President Lyndon Johnson. Woody Harrelson is a very underrated, supremely talented actor. Now, I mean, he can make me laugh like very few others can. I can think of Robin Williams, God rest his soul, Jim Carrey, Steve Martin. There are not many people that can make me laugh like Woody Harrelson can. I mean, he was absolutely awesome in Cheers, if you're old enough to remember that sitcom. This was not a popular movie, but Zombieland was hilarious. Kind of a spoof on the zombie apocalypse shows that whole genre kind of blew up all at once. And Zombieland is a just absolutely side-splitting, hilarious, basically parody of a zombie movie. And Woody Harrelson is one of the lead actors, and oh God, he is so funny in that. I really encourage you to watch it. If you just want to mindlessly laugh at something, I don't think it's that long. And sometimes you'll stumble across it on TV, even just on regular cable channels. But Zombieland was hilarious. I loved him in White Men Can't Jump. So he can definitely play the funny roles, but he can also play a very serious role. And he played a very believable portrayal of LBJ. He was spectacular. Richard Jenkins played Senator Richard Russell, who was one of LBJ's main supporters through all his time in the Senate and then as vice president. Richard Jenkins is one of those kind of supporting actors that's in all kinds of movies that you like. You know, he's never the lead actor, but he's in a lot of movies that you know and love, but you don't realize it. He was outstanding. Bill Pullman, who is one of my very favorite actors, he played Senator Ralph Yarborough, was spectacular. Jeffrey Donovan was, I mean, fantastic as JFK. This was a spectacular story of the evolution of Lyndon Johnson. From he was a supremely powerful, no BS, don't screw around with me Senate Majority Leader. He goes from that to basically an afterthought of a VP under JFK. And this story of his is really captivating, where he was trying to maintain support from his longtime allies, many of whom were from the segregated South, while trying to appease and gain the acceptance of the more progressive wing of the Democrat Party in the 1950s and early 1960s that supported JFK. Now, many of John F. Kennedy's inner circle despised LBJ. They basically used him because they needed to win Texas to win the White House. It was a very tightly contested race between Kennedy and Richard Nixon in 1960. I think it came down to like 112,000 votes. It was very, very tight. And the Democrats knew they needed to win Texas to win the White House. So who better to bring onto the ticket as the VP choice than Lyndon Johnson, who, like I said, was the Senate Majority Leader, Senator, popular Democrat Senator from Texas, a state they needed to win, and it worked. JFK strongly advocated for advancement of a civil rights bill. I mean, that was one of the hallmarks of his candidacy, and in the years that he spent as president, that was a main focus of his, was the advancement of a civil rights bill. Now, LBJ came from a different wing of the Democrat Party, and JFK respected Lyndon Johnson when many of his own supporters and closest advisors did not. He would stand up for him at cabinet meetings, and I mean, he would go back at his own brother, who was his attorney general, who was no fan of Lyndon Johnson. It was just very interesting to see the dynamic between these two. Now, the movie takes you through the assassination, you know, right down to where Johnson is hauled away in a hospital room that they, at least in the movie, had to kick a patient out of, you know, not knowing what was going to happen to the president, and how Johnson had to hold this Democrat coalition together through unimaginable tragedy, you know, as well as guiding a mourning nation. You know, obviously JFK was supremely popular and young and good looking, and you know, America had been captivated with him and kind of fell in love with him and the whole idea of the Kennedy family. And Johnson, who was coming again from a different wing of the Democrat Party, after JFK's death was responsible for having to hold this whole coalition and the country together. And it was just a fascinating story of how he had to stare down his own longtime supporters to see JFK's civil rights bill come to light. Richard Russell, the senator played by Richard Jenkins, was his longstanding ally in the Senate, but was no fan of the civil rights movement. And it takes you through this, you know, this lifelong friendship coming to a head when Johnson, you know, he decided that the civil rights bill was not going to die with JFK at the hands of Lee Harvey Oswald. And not only did he get the civil rights bill through, he followed that up the very next year, I believe, with a voting rights bill, and then followed that up in his full term after he took over the presidency in 1963 and then was elected to his own term in 1964 by a wide margin. And he also got Medicare and Medicaid through in the years that followed in that full term of his. So I'm not sure how exactly true to life this movie was. I mean, it might have been doctored up Hollywood style for the big screen. I am not as familiar with this story as I should be, and after watching the movie, I need to familiarize myself more with this relationship between these two, the dynamic between the two sides, and how Lyndon Johnson helped the country and his party move forward after, you know, the tragic death of JFK. And I will be reading a book or two on this. And again, I don't know how true to life this movie was, but if you have the time and you like political, presidential, you know, movies like that, or if you want to learn a thing or two about LBJ, who I did not know much about, I highly recommend this movie. Again, I found it on Roku. I'm sure you could find it probably any number of places, but definitely worth your time. And I will definitely be studying up on that period in American history, and especially those two men and how two very, and yes, they were both Democrats, but boy, did they come from opposite sides of the street, and how these two managed to hold their coalition together, you know, win a tight election in 1960, and then do some really, really good things for the country. So highly recommend it. There have been some really unsettling current events that I want to talk about today. There is something going on out there. I can't put my finger on it exactly. I know it isn't good. I fear, and I don't fear easily. I'm not a worrier. I don't sit around, you know, anxiously chewing my fingernails, wondering, you know, worrying about what's going to happen, what might happen, what could happen. This is not really in my nature, but I fear that we're on the precipice of something really bad. I hope I'm wrong. I don't know exactly what that something is, but we're going to get into two specific current events here that really have me wondering what is going on out there. I don't like it. It is not good. I don't think it ends well. I hope I'm wrong, but we'll get into these two things here. But I am a little fearful of what's going on in our country among a certain segment of our population right now. First thing I want to talk about is this Daniel Penny case. Now, if you're not familiar with it, this is the New York subway Good Samaritan case. Basically, what happened was last year, I believe it was in May of 2023, Daniel Penny subdued an unruly subway passenger named Jordan Neely that got into a subway car with Penny and several other passengers and immediately began behaving wildly erratically and verbally and physically threatening other passengers. I mean, getting right up in their face, saying things like, "I don't care if I die," and "I'm ready to spend the rest of my life in prison." I mean, he was getting right up in these people's faces, and these people were scared. Now, Penny, who was a former member of the military, I believe he was former, could have been current, but I think he was former military. This went on for a while. And finally, he decided, because he could see the fear in these people's eyes. I mean, there was a woman with a young child and, you know, just a lot of people that were clearly scared and threatened by this person who was just acting completely inappropriately and completely threatening. Penny waited for an opportunity to use his military training to subdue this Jordan Neely. And ultimately, he got him on the ground. Penny got Neely on the ground in a submission hold. And like I said, there were other passengers in this subway car, and some of them helped him restrain this unruly passenger. And Penny's plan was to hold him until the next subway stop, and people had already called the authorities. So he wanted to hold him down and subdue him, restrain him until they got to the next stop and law enforcement could take over. Well, long story short, sadly, Jordan Neely died in that subway car as a result of this encounter. Now, Penny clearly didn't intend to kill him, didn't want to kill him, didn't try to kill him. And again, others were helping him restrain this person because he kept fighting. They didn't want to let him go, because when somebody is acting basically psychotically, you don't want to release them and just see what's going to happen. No one knew who this person was. No one knew if he was on something, because he was behaving so erratically, or what he would do or what he was capable of doing. I mean, put yourself in that situation. You're in an enclosed space. I mean, there's no police presence there. You're on your own until that subway pulls up to the next stop. You are basically at the mercy of whoever else is in that subway car. Now, the medical examiner labeled Neely's death a homicide. Now, any normal, sane society would applaud Daniel Penny for his efforts to protect the other passengers while certainly lamenting the tragedy of Jordan Neely's death and move on with their lives, encouraging people not to threaten other passengers in subway cars or in any other public space for that matter. Well, this happened in Manhattan. So naturally, Daniel Penny was arrested and charged with criminal reckless homicide. This is a charge that was brought by District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who is the very same district attorney that broke 250 years of precedent by indicting former president at the time, Donald Trump, on that ridiculous documents case with the hush money payment that we talked about in an earlier episode. This man clearly cares far more about racial activism than he does actual justice. I say racial because I made it this far in this story without telling you that Daniel Penny is white. Jordan Neely was black. I made it this far in the story without saying that because it is completely irrelevant to the actual story. So naturally, that's what the entire trial became about in the eyes of the legacy media and the usual race baiters out there. Now, thankfully, this past week, Penny was found not guilty. This was the only correct verdict. This case never should have been brought in the first place. Cases like this, I mean, even though he won, this case will still echo in the ears of other potential Good Samaritans who might otherwise act to protect people in a similar situation, but end up not doing it because they see what happens to people like Daniel Penny. They get their name dredged through the mud, calling him, of course, every horrible name that they can, all the usual insults. And others in the future, I mean, and who's to say I wouldn't do the same thing, might think twice before stepping in to save someone because of what this corrupt and utterly embarrassing DA tried to do to him. So he's found not guilty, and of course, the incredibly predictable reaction from the left and the race baiters. Oh, it's a racist country. It's a rigged system, blah, blah, blah. It's all the same BLM nonsense we've grown far too accustomed to. They use these tropes in cases where they obviously don't apply, like this one. When they go off on these racist tantrums because a given court case does not end the way they feel like it should, forget the details, it didn't end up the way they wanted it. Well, it does a complete disservice to everyone who has suffered actual racism and that have actually been victimized by a white supremacist or a racist or they were victimized by the judicial system in some way. Now, clearly, that is not what happened here, but they're all out there right now crying racism and white supremacy into the void. Never a mention of what Jordan Neely did, conveniently leaving out the fact that he was threatening innocent passengers who were simply minding their own business. They went so far as to say he wasn't a threat, that he was just being loud. They're so desperate for another Rodney King, which was an actually legitimate case, that they try to wedge everything into that mold. They try to force it on every single case that involves a white person, in this case Daniel Penny, living, and a black person, in this case Jordan Neely, dying. Even in clear cases of justified action, like this one, where the death was clearly accidental. If Jordan Neely had just gotten onto that train, sat down, and minded his own business, he'd still be alive today. Or at least he still would have left the subway train alive. They talk about this case like, basically, like Neely got on the train, sat down, started listening to music, and Daniel Penny just got up, walked across the subway car, and killed him in cold blood because he was black. I mean, if you listen to their commentary on it, it really wouldn't be any different. they're talking now as if that's what happened. I mean, even Neely's father suddenly came out of nowhere. Now, he was nowhere to be found during the years of Jordan Neely's life, where he was homeless, dozens of arrests, horrible drug addictions. He even punched an elderly woman in the face. That was one of his many, many arrests. This was not just an innocent person looking for help. He was under the influence of extremely powerful drugs. And of course, his father reacts after being absent all of that time, comes back now to chastise America and say that the system is, quote, the system is rigged. You know, Jordan probably could have used his father back when he was alive, before any of this happened. Where was Father Neely then? Thank God the jury came to the right decision. And the world needs more Daniel Pennies and fewer Alvin Braggs, for that matter. We need to stop vilifying masculinity and men doing what they're hardwired to do, which is protect. They see a threat. We're wired to protect. We are, by nature, protectors. That's what we're wired to do. And Alvin Bragg needs to be voted out in just unmistakable, overwhelming fashion. What an absolute embarrassment to the legal profession. Now, the other situation I want to talk about is this. It sounds like it's out of a movie, but it's not. This case involving the murder of the United Healthcare CEO, also in New York. His name was Brian Thompson. And he was shot in the back and killed while walking from his hotel to a shareholder conference last week. Right out on the streets of New York. The killer had obviously planned this out and was specifically targeting him. He knew where he'd be. He knew when he'd be there. He was on the sidewalk basically waiting for him. This killing is on video, which I do not encourage you to watch. I've seen bits and pieces of it. I have not watched it through. I don't seek that stuff out. It creeps me out. I don't watch stuff like that. But he basically watched him walk by. The killer watched Brian Thompson walk by, and he got about probably 10, 15 feet away, pulled out his gun and shot him in the back, killing him. And initially, he got away. Now, he was caught a few days later in Pennsylvania at a McDonald's earlier this week. He had the gun on him. He had a manifesto on him. He had some ammunition in his bag. By all accounts, it looked like he might even be heading back towards New York, given where he had been earlier in the day. I mean, he all but admitted to it in his writings and while he was being walked into the jail by law enforcement. I mean, it's, as I say, innocent until proven guilty, but it's about a 99%er that this is the guy. Now, there has been a bizarre, almost demonic reaction to this across a good segment of the left, and I've even seen it from some on the right. So this is not political. This is human. And I know I'm using the word demonic a lot. I'm not overly religious. I should be more religious than I am. But when I see things like this that just, they don't, there are people on major news networks, members of the legacy media, they're almost, a friend of mine used the word gleeful. That's a good word to use. They're borderline gleeful that this CEO of this big bad health insurance company was gunned down in cold blood on the streets of New York. Here is one such example. This is from Piers Morgan's show called Piers Morgan Uncensored. And he's talking to a panel that includes a woman by the name of Taylor Lorenz. Taylor Lorenz is a lunatic and B, a former employee of both the New York Times and the Washington Post. Now, if this clip doesn't tell you that we are not sending our best and brightest to the legacy media outlets these days, I mean, I don't know how much more evidence you need. Here is Taylor Lorenz's reaction to the cold-blooded killing of Brian Thompson on the Piers Morgan show a few days ago.
I do believe in the sanctity of life, and I think that's why I felt, along with so many other Americans, joy, unfortunately, you know, because it
joy?
Feels like...
Serious?
I mean...
Joy in a man's execution?
Maybe not joy, but certainly not, no, certainly not empathy. Because again,
we're watching the footage. How can this make you joyful? This guy's a husband, he's a father, and he's being gunned down in the middle of Manhattan. Why does that make you joyful?
Tens of Americans that be murdered. So are the tens of thousands of Americans, innocent Americans, who died because greedy health insurance executives like this one push a policies of denying care to the most vulnerable people. And the many millions of Americans that have watched people that I care about suffer and in some cases die because of lack of health care.
So should they all be killed then? Should they all be killed, these healthcare executives? Would that make you even more joyful?
No, that would not.
But why not?
And,
why are you laughing?
I think it wouldn't fix the system.
You seem to find the whole thing hilarious.
I find your question funny.
A bloke's been murdered in the street. I don't find it funny at all.
I don't find it funny that tens of thousands of Americans die every year and because they are denied life-saving health care from people like the CEO. Now, I want to fix this system. You're right. We shouldn't be going around shooting each other with vigilante justice. No. I think that it is a good thing that this murder has led to America, or really the media elites and politicians in this country paying attention to this issue for the first time. You mentioned you couldn't understand why somebody would feel this reaction when they watched a CEO die. It's because you have not dealt, it sounds like, with the American healthcare system in the way that millions of other Americans have.
I've dealt with the healthcare system in various ways in America. I don't think it's perfect by any means, but the idea that I would... view it as something.
Have you been denied life-saving?
Hang on. The idea that I would view it as something joyful that a man has been, who's just a healthcare executive, has been executed in the street, I find completely bizarre.
Good on Piers Morgan for calling this despicable woman out for the. I can't even make sense of what that woman was saying there. Now, I am. No fan of the American healthcare system. I have mentioned in the past that I am going to be talking very specifically about healthcare in an upcoming episode of this show. And that isn't going to change, but she spent 90% of that, a little over 2 minute soundbite, justifying it. She said she felt joy and then she tried to walk it back. I'm sorry, it's too late. That's how she feels. That's what she said first. That's how she feels. And she's not alone. Jimmy Kimmel, who we have discussed on this show at length in the past. Number one, who the hell is watching this pathetic excuse of a TV show anymore? Really, who's watching Jimmy Kimmel on a nightly basis? Anyway, he spent an entire segment of his show not talking about Brian Thompson, the man who was killed, not talking about his kids, who now 3 weeks in front of Christmas no longer have their father. He was talking about how good-looking the killer is. Because that's become a very popular talking point on this, mainly on the left. Some on the right also. Like I said, I'm not trying to be political about this one. This is just being a decent human. No, people aren't talking about the two teenage boys who no longer have a father. Or the wife that no longer has a husband, they're talking about how good-looking he is. Going through his social media and looking at the posts he made of his six-pack abs, it seriously makes me want to vomit. I mean, honestly, who is watching this? This sentiment is all over the legacy media. Again, all the usual suspects. Joy Reid, Whoopi, it's all over CNN. You don't have to dig to the deepest recesses of the dark web to find this. It's all over major news networks. Celebrating his good looks and his six-pack abs, all but agreeing with what he did. He killed Brian Thompson in cold blood. Premeditated the killing of Brian Thompson. Now, Brian Thompson was first and foremost a human being. like I said, a father of two teenage boys who now, right in front of Christmas and the holidays, no longer have a father. Their father was violently taken from them. Yes, he was the CEO of a healthcare company, a wildly unpopular healthcare company in a country with a wildly unpopular healthcare system. It's an unpopular industry for good reason. And in my opinion, yes, he, among many others like him, and we will get into this topic in a future show, yes, he was wildly overcompensated. I heard he made $10 million a year, which is categorically absurd. And we will get into this kind of wild overcompensation in great detail in future shows. And we have so much to talk about regarding our completely, hopelessly broken healthcare system. But right now we can't talk about it. Because anything that we talk about now in regards to healthcare reforms now only comes off as excusing this killer and justifying his actions. Now, his name is out there all over the place. I am choosing to make it a policy on my show here. I'm not going to use the name of people who seek fame and try to attain it by killing other people or doing other such horrible things just to gain fame and notoriety. People like him only want the attention and the recognition, whether it's fame or notoriousness. They don't care. I'm not going to indulge him. His name is out there. It's all over the place. I'm not going to use his name. I will refer to him as the killer. But now, I mean, all of this is radioactive. You can't talk about anything healthcare related now because it all comes off as a justification for what this person did. Killing Brian Thompson changed absolutely nothing about our healthcare system, nor did it change the way that United Healthcare does business. There's so much to talk about on this front, but right now we can't because this misguided, overprivileged, overeducated, self-proclaimed vigilante decided to take his perverted concept of justice into his own hands. And the reaction to this by so many on the left, and like I said, even some on the right, it's beyond troubling. What kind of society cheers premeditated murder? While all the while besmirching men that step up to protect the vulnerable from harm or worse in that subway car. This all happened in the same city. How can such a society survive? When a man who steps in to protect a mother and her child from unrelenting threats of an unhinged drug-addled madman is dismissed as a racist white supremacist, while a man who ambushes and murders an unarmed man by shooting him in the back is celebrated as a hero. Find yourself a better hero. Find yourself a better hero than someone who shoots an unarmed father of two in the back on the streets of New York. God, our society is so sick. It is so poisoned. We have fallen so scarily far, morally, ethically. And, you know, you put all this together with the BLM rioting in 2020 that was cheered on by an entire political party in this country and was funded by groups that never have to suffer the consequences of the vile society-ending activist policies that they promote and pay for. Trump almost getting killed twice, getting shot on stage, almost killed on live TV. And then you add in the fact that 65% of people want abortion on demand, little to no limits on it. For any reason, at any term. And then you add in the fact that euthanasia is gaining popularity among civilized Western countries. What does this all say about our current society's value of human life? I mean, is this the way? Is this the new way forward? Assassinations? We don't like what this person does for a living, or we don't like the industry they work for, so we just get to kill them? A civilization that embraces this kind of mentality is not long for this world. And it's doomed to descend ultimately into utter lawless chaos if we don't stop it. And I personally want no part of that. It's going to end up like a never-ending episode of The Walking Dead, where it's just a bunch of militia groups just wandering around with guns and just killing each other for resources and territory. We need to end this mentality right now. I mean, here today, while it's still, hopefully, a minority line of thinking. I just don't even recognize this kind of behavior. This is not the America I grew up in. And this is not the America or the world that I want my kids and grandkids growing up in. I truly feel like our society, our culture is at a precipice. And we need to step back from it and get back to what made us great. Faith, family, love of country, a unified effort and desire to make this country as great as it can possibly be. And it feels like we're getting a long way away from that. I sincerely hope the re-election of Donald Trump can start getting us back in that right direction. We have to universally reject the reactions of those who view this killer as anything but exactly that. There's no justification for what he did. And our disgusting legacy media falls further into the infernal pit of vileness with every passing day, with every single story like this that comes up. We have to fight against this anti-American, anti-family, anti-God, anti-decency plague that is slowly spreading over our society. We have to fight it. I pray that you stick with me and we will fight it together. So, those are the two current events that have me very, very worried about the state of our culture, of our society. I mean, there's part of me that's very, very happy that the majority of the country voted for Trump and voted against all the identity politics and the DEI garbage and woke progressiveness that the Democrats are putting out there right now. But then there's another part of me that looks at these two cases in particular and I can't make sense of them. I am worried about the state of our culture and our civilization when we start vilifying Good Samaritans and idolizing cold-blooded killers. So, what's next? Like I said, I'm still working on the California and Florida comparison. A lot of research, a lot of data points, and I want to make it as thorough as I can. So, that is still a work in progress. That will be coming up on a show in the very, very near future. That is one show that we are working on that should be ready to go here sooner than later. I am so pumped about this. Our Harris voter conversation. Remember, I mentioned a few episodes ago that I was working on a sit down discussion with a very particular Harris voter. It's a go. I talked to her earlier this week. We ran into each other and she is fully on board and she's excited. I'm excited. We have a great relationship and this will likely happen in mid-January, hopefully just before the inauguration. We got Christmas and New Year's coming up here. She has some travel coming up that I'm sure we'll discuss when she gets back and we're able to sit down and have this discussion. And even as we were talking about this, I presented her with, you know, this idea of mine, and she could not have jumped on it faster. She was like, oh, I'd love to. And she says, I love a good debate. And we were both talking to each other with smiles on our faces. We started a friendly little debate, even as I asked her about it, as the subject came up. And we got like 1 or 2 minutes in, and she's like, you know what? We got to save this. And I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. We're already off and running, and you know we're not even sitting down with microphones yet. So it's going to be great. I can't wait. It's going to be so fun, and that will be a real treat for you. So hopefully we'll have that sometime mid-January. I'm hoping we can do that kind of as a inauguration special, or you know, kind of right in front of the inauguration, which is January 20th. So that's my hope. We'll see if we can make that time frame stick, but. Lots of other great stuff planned and in the works. And of course, we will continue to follow the news and bring you what we feel is worthy of our time to discuss. There's a very complicated story out of Syria that we will touch on in a show in the near future here. I mean, just what the Middle East needs is more instability, and exactly what that area didn't need. But we will get into more of that in the near future, and it's very complicated, and the Middle East seems to have a whole lot of problems and not a whole lot of answers, and this is just adding another log to that fire. So we will get into that in the next show or two here. Again, thank you as always for joining me. I'm sorry it took a while. I can't promise the next one won't be equally as far out. It's been a crazy month. It is every year in my business in December. The day job and the winter conditions are just, they're not playing nice right now. And we will get back on schedule after the holidays, I promise you. Hopefully I can get one more in here. Well, I will get at least one more in before Christmas. Hopefully two, because I've got a couple of things that are just about ready to go, but it can just be hard to find the time this time of year. But we'll talk to you again soon. We're going to wrap here. Again, thank you so much for joining me. This has been Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. Don't be a jerk. If you use sauce with your steak, you need to buy better steak. And I'll talk to you next time.